What's up, guys? Welcome to the final portion of Roleplay R&D, the festival and reunion show. I don't know what the fuck we're calling this episode, but regardless, Steven, what's going on?
So, as you guys climb out of the crater that's left by the tomb of Cathras the Great, and you reach the top, you hear this, and a number of squirrel warriors come flying in on their outstretched membranes and swoop down, landing next to you, and they say, "Halt! Is it true that ye have slain the great worm, Cathrist?"
"It is true."
I raise the heart of Cathrist in my hand as DJ Wheat.
And you hear a voice from back in the woods say, "Well, good fucking job, guys!" And out walks Duncan with Willy's Willy clasped in his
hands. I give him
hands.
The dirtiest look ever.
And he says,
"I'm tempted to pull out my dagger right now."
He says, I'm going to sing the best songs about you guys. Lobelia, you're just the best. Wow.
Who's this guy? Who's this ass clown?"
I look at Lord Wyman and I'm like, "That would be Sir Duncan."
He bows and he says, "I would be Sir Duncan."
"I've heard stories of what a terrible bard you were, my friend."
Sir Duncan says, "Well, I found my place among the squirrel people, and they certainly seem to like my music." And he goes, and then like a couple of squirrels near him start like. And he says, "Come, let us lead you back to Jaowen. We will escort you and make sure that you reach home safely."
Wait, do we get to fly on the squirrels?
One of the squirrels shoots you a look that says, "We are way too puny to like let anybody ride on top of us. So no, you don't get to fly on the squirrels." Okay. Are you going to accept
a little disappointed.
This escort back home?
Yes.
All right.
Yes, let's do it.
The squirrels like walk alongside you, occasionally cheering and letting out a war howl. And like a couple of them have slings that have like a special like seed pod as the ammunition, and they throw it high into the air. And like as it flies, it bursts, and the seeds inside immediately ignite on contact with the air. And it's like fireworks are shooting off all around you and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And they lead you back home. Magnus, can you tell us what's happened to your arm? Because you mentioned that in the break, and I thought it was totally awesome.
Are we going with it? Okay.
Yes,
so,
absolutely.
While I was inside the dragon, there were, my left arm was cut off by the dragon. And then he started growing tendons and sinew and all kinds of stuff inside. And my arm was trapped, and it kind of fused with the dragon. So my left arm is very mutated and...
Yeah,
half dragon, half.
It's got like human. Scales all over it and stuff, and the end of your arm is like claws and stuff. The rest of you, have you guys like, have you guys applied bandages and stuff to heal yourself up?
Yes, yeah. Every single bandage that I have left.
Some of the squirrels come over to you and apply like herbs and salves to your foreheads, and you feel your wounds knitting closed. A bat flies over you in the daylight, and as it passes, you think you hear it whisper, "I am the night, the bat of the forest." You make it back to Jaowen without any incident. How are you guys transporting Rock's corpse?
That's a great question. It's a good thing that these flying squirrels happen to have a stretcher that they brought with this strange one they call Duncan. And
it is.
They
it
are
is a good thing. They were prepared for the worst. And so a couple of the flying squirrels are carrying the Shayuride, as they call themselves, are carrying Rock's corpse on a litter. And they've heaped flowers on him and placed a crown woven out of flowers on his head in memory of the important role he played in the slaying of Cathras the Great Worm. You make it back to Jaowen, and as you stride into town and the gates open before you, like everybody starts like running around and gathering friends and family and visitors, and everybody comes out to greet you and cheers. And they turn to you, and they say, "What has happened? Why has Rock fallen? Is the great worm dead? Are we free?"
"You are free, people. The great worm Cathrist has been slain by this fine party here. And as you can see, we did have some casualties."
And I hold the heart up.
They all cheer, and Mayor Jones steps forward, and he like does a little jig and says, "Oh my, how wonderfully well done." And he leads you into the cat's paw, and they pour out kegs of ale, and the entire town has a celebration. Lord Wyman?
Yes.
Do you have any songs to sing at this celebration?
It just so happens that as the celebration has aptly been started and people are into their third or fourth drink, I approach the stage and hark for everyone's attention. And I said, "We have been through a great journey. As you can see, I'm still bleeding out here. I'm missing an arm now. And there are lessons to be learned on such great journeys. And there are people to be thanked as well. And so I dedicate this song not only to a person, but also to each of you as a warning." "Trekking out into dark dungeons, think you won't be next to die. But heed my warning within the darkness, sweet seducing eyes. There's a man, you might not see him. Hold your life within his hands. And if he wishes, you're gonna drop dead. Now do you understand? If they ask why, tell him it's the DM's nature. Why does he kill us that way? If they ask why, tell him it's in Steven's nature. Why? Does he kill me that way? Why does he do us that way? Why do we love it? We're insane." Thank you, Steven!
Yeah!
The crowd cheers and showers you with gold. And let's end it there. And
we had another song for us, though, that he didn't get to sing, right?
I don't know, man. Maybe it's just going to get locked away in the Wyman archives.
You guys are still alive, man. We can come back one day.
Yeah,
we still need to do a full R&D series with Ryan. So we got characters ready now.
It's true.
It's true.
It's a shame he only got to see 1.5 sessions of Dungeon World.
It is. It is indeed. It is indeed. All right. Well, I was prepared for the last reunion show we did. This one I'm not so much. I guess first off, I think that... Dungeon World is, compared to almost everything else, Ryan, you probably have the best perspective on this because you're so new to it, but you were describing it as a system that you prefer almost now over D&D. Is that accurate? Am I putting words in your mouth?
No, I really, really like the system. The Dungeon World system was awesome. I like that, you know, you're kind of more free with your actions. I like the structure as well, but this was a blast, man. So the Dungeon World system is really cool. Also, like, I'm more of a traditional, like, loot and monsters type of guy. Like, I like fighting monsters. I like getting loot. And this was, like, perfect. Like, the fact that there was always action, always death around the corner was really cool.
It wasn't so much like that. Like, when we were in the town, it was definitely more RP heavy. Like, I think we spent an entire episode in a town.
Yeah.
But, like, stuff got on fire, like half the town burned down, like stuff was still going on,
sure.
But it was definitely
still
very RP. Yeah, it was like it was less combat for sure.
Yeah, I think the 2d6 roll, I like how they work. Like, it seems much more, it actually seems more lenient than a d20 from what I've seen.
Yeah. No, I mean, with incorporated, obviously the fail rolls gain you XP.
Right. It's I like that aspect as well.
I mean, it depends on who's rolling the dice, really.
Well, you're right. But it's so interesting that they have this nice balance between, hey, I failed. Oh, my God, that sucks. But I earned XP, so I'm actually kind of happy. Let's see what happens. You know, like, just I'm sure having a DM who can get really creative on your failed rolls and even on some of your success rolls helps a lot. But that's one aspect I really love about Dungeon World. And I think it took me a while to warm up to. I mean, Apocalypse World, you know, great things would happen, and then like the most terrible things would happen. Once you get a feeling for that, I think that it's almost fun to see. Well, let's find out what Steven's going to throw at me if I fail on this. So I really liked all that.
My favorite thing about the rolling mechanic in the world games is that idea that like failures aren't just that you attacked and missed. They're not a dead end. They push right. things forwards. And like I've read a bunch of stuff about like from the GM's perspective, often like especially before I found Dungeon World, it was like, here's the story that I want to tell, here's how I want things to happen. And like the failures in Dungeon World encourage you to not just hold to your story, but push it forwards directly. So like, okay, you're going through an area where you know there are orcs. Roll to see, you know, like roll your scouting roll. Okay, well, you rolled a 6. That means that like that orc boss that I thought you were going to fight in the fortress out in the place, maybe he just found you. So like the story, it just gets pushed forwards. It's not just, well, you get lost or, well, you don't know where you're going. It's, no, something happens. And that's really exciting to me. One of the hardest things for the GM, I think, in this system is partial successes on a 7-9, because especially right. the rule is it is still a success. It should still feel like a success to the players. And I always tried, and I don't know how completely successful I was, but I always tried to make it clear that when you rolled a 7-9, it was good for you, but at a cost. And that's a really hard line to follow.
Well, I mean, sometimes it was attention, sometimes it was damage, sometimes it was, but I think everyone, you know, always evaluated that and was like, you know, they took their lickings, I guess you could say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's very true.
So to talk quickly from the GM's perspective about how I'm supposed to play Dungeon World, I actually see someone saying in chat, the DM can do that in D&D as well. Grush Kappa says that. That's absolutely true. And I've run a couple games of D&D that are a little bit more in the Dungeon World style of game. But one of the things that I'm sort of aiming for as a result of R&D, and like one of the reasons I wanted to cycle through a number of games, was to showcase different systems and how following the rules of the system create very different experiences. And I actually think that there was a very different experience that came out of Dungeon World than from Apocalypse World, even though the systems were very similar. And we're going to play a really different game next time that I think will get a really different experience. So the way that the GM works is I have moves just like the players do. And when I think like second session or something like that, I said, you know, I can never say the names of my moves, so I don't want you to say the names of your moves either. I want you to tell me, narrate for me what is happening, and then we'll figure out a move that works. So some of my moves are, for example, to reveal an unwelcome truth. For example, Cathrist isn't dead. That's an unwelcome truth that I can reveal. I can deal damage. I can use your resources, like make you pull something out of your adventuring gear, or make you consume a use of your wand or something like that. I can separate them. So there were a number of times in a number of the fights when someone rolled a 7-9, I didn't deal damage. Instead, I said, okay, well, Lobelia is on the other side and Rock is on that side. So between the two of you, there's a huge ass dragon. All sorts of things like that. I can use, there's a number of moves for the dungeon, including change the environment, point to a looming threat, introduce a new faction or type of creature, all sorts of, and like, I've actually been reading a lot of Fritz, what is his name? The book series is called Fofford and the Gray Mouser by, the author's name is Fritz Lieber. And it's classic sword and sorcery stuff. And actually, looking at classic sword and sorcery books from the perspective of Dungeon World, you start seeing all of these things happening in the stories. Like if you read Conan or things like that, you'll see, you know, he loses something. He loses a gem he was trying to hold onto, and then he's got to scramble to get it back. Or, he ends up separated from his party members. So I think that the rules of Dungeon World have done a fantastic job of giving GMs a structured rule set that guides them towards creating that core experience of sword and sorcery stuff. So that's really awesome. Some of the, I saw someone mentioning earlier, like doubling damage, doubling health. Some of the changes that I made to Dungeon World to sort of hack it in the direction of the Death Trap Dungeon was any solitary monster, notably except for Cathrist. had its health doubled.
Oh, shit.
So Cathrist had, he only had 27 hit points. And in the Dungeon World book, a dragon, like the straight up dragon, only has 16 hit points. And there's something really interesting about having like one of the most terrifying creatures in the game have relatively only a handful of hit points, because the danger isn't necessarily their health or the amount of damage they put out.
Right.
But if you try to get close, you're defying danger to do that. Maybe they can make two attacks at once. Maybe they can fly. Maybe they have fire breath. All sorts of cool narrative stuff that really changes the way the game plays. So that's enough rambling on my side.
Actually, Steven, as a DM, like, is there anything you would change about Dungeon World?
Oh, wow. What a really great question. Well, I did change the XP system that we were using, because originally it's and I didn't actually do that terribly well. Ha ha. But the end of session XP, I think, motivates you to take specific actions during the game. And one of the things I really like about like really, truly old school role playing is that you don't usually earn most of your XP for killing monsters. You earn it for getting treasure, because like the classic sword and sorcery experience is like you're a greedy bastard who's going into these unholy places just to scrape up a few coin. So I changed the rules at the end to say, did we learn something new and important about the world? Instead of did we overcome a notable monster or enemy, I changed it to did we loot a magic item? And then did we loot a certain amount of coin? Sort of, you know, the idea is to incentivize you guys to be more greedy rather than focused on killing monsters, especially in like that death trap dungeon situation. I've seen a number of people being like, oh my God, these fights are completely unfair. The point isn't to be fair in an old school death trap dungeon. It's to be interesting and allow the players to creatively overcome challenges that probably they wouldn't be able to if they just went in swinging. And pretty much every time you guys went in just swinging, you ended up having some serious challenges. And then once you started getting more clever, it started getting really cool. Thinking back to when you guys found the six or so salamanders around the altar in the room immediately before Cathrist. Like originally, that was sort of a big fight with six or so salamanders, plus like a puzzle to figure out how to lower the bridge and get across so that you could access Cathrist. And the really clever thing that JP did was he just resurrected a salamander and then just talked his way through that. And that's the perfect sort of creative way of overcoming challenges, that having a really punishing system encourages your players to discover. So I really like that about this kind of game. But notably, people have said also, I really liked Apocalypse World more because it felt like the players got a lot more control over the story. And it's important for me to say that you can absolutely run Dungeon World the same way, especially moves like Spout Lore and Discern Realities. Spout Lore says, when you consult your accumulated knowledge about something, roll plus intelligence on a 10 plus, the GM will tell you something interesting and useful about the subject relevant to your situation. It's perfectly legit to just say, okay, you're spouting lore, tell me something. And then, you know, Lobelia could say, well, I remember hearing that this demon who spawns these larvae, she puts some of her life into each of the larvae, so killing them deals damage to the demon as well. And that puts the power in the player's hands to create this really engaging world that they're just as invested in as Apocalypse World was. I was wanting to run this a little bit differently because we did that so aggressively with Apocalypse World. And I think it's one of the beauties of the Dungeon World system that it does both sides of the coin equally as well. And I was trying, one of the core tenets for the GM is to ask questions and use the answers. And I was always trying to ask questions. What do you think is down there? What are you looking for? Where are you trying to go? And I think it was originally JP who decided that this dungeon was Cathrist's lair, in fact, as part of his opening move.
Yeah, and I mean, we as players were the ones who decided, like, I was the one who said we needed Cathrist's heart to get through the gates.
Absolutely.
So, I mean, that was, a lot of it was player-driven to some extent.
Yes, so that's still important. But much of it was also from my mind instead of more collaborative. But Dungeon World works very well at either extreme. You can run a Dungeon World game where it is fully like it is the GM's story that they're pushing forwards, or you can run it where it's entirely coming from the players. So that's really cool.
I want to say one thing that I really liked, and I don't know if this is the Dungeon World system or you, Steven, but the way that you introduced me into the party was awesome. So like, I don't know if that was your idea or how you normally do it, but the fact that like I just got thrown into the middle of it and I had no idea what was going on, and it felt completely chaotic and crazy, and just like I had to make choices on the fly and just get thrown into it. That was really, really cool.
That's, I mean, the book encourages you to do that, so I can't take full credit.
Yeah.
And actually, I sort of failed to do that when we very first kicked off. I had you guys waking up from camp in the mountains, and there was a tower nearby. But what the book says, one of the strongest things to do is start in the middle of the action. One of the easy ways to do that is to ask questions, use the answers. Hey, you guys are running from something, or you're fighting something, or you're in trouble. What is it? And I didn't do that with the start of the group. And it took just like a second or two to get rolling. And when we got into the Tower of Alistraz out in the Beholder's Eye Mountains. But for you, Ryan, I knew that I wanted to introduce you quickly, get you to the party. Mm-hmm. And since the dungeon is so dangerous, it just made a lot of sense to invite you to join in by throwing you into things.
For me, that was really, really cool. I like that.
Now,
that was cool.
I know that Maggie wants to talk about this topic, so I'm going to come out and say I love the XP system in Dungeon World, because I think that philosophically, when you fail, you do earn XP in real life. I think that failing is one of the iterative processes that allows you to improve at a difficult skill. So I really like that you fail in Dungeon World in order to earn XP. And also, it very interestingly encourages players to do things that their characters are not good at because they're pursuing XP. And I remember one or two times... Maggie in the post show would say, "Oh man, you know, I rolled so well, I didn't get any XP."
Right.
And I think it's actually cool that like there's a system that encourages players to fail, which has direct story consequences, because then the GM can use some of his moves to like ratchet up the tension. I think that's really cool. But I've also talked with Maggie a couple times.
Yeah,
can you tell us about your perspective?
I understand where you're coming from, and I think that that's a great concept. I mean, in real life, you do gain experience based on like the things that you do in life, right? But I think that in games, that's not necessarily something that I want to always happen. And I don't think that that's necessarily the problem. The problem is that the way it occurs. So for me, I want to experience a little bit more of this game, and I don't get to get any new abilities. That's the thing that I was kind of missing out on. I really wanted to see, like, when I delve deep into being a thief, what do I have? What utilities do I have? Whereas a lot of times it's like, oh, I have two things that I can do, or one thing that I could do. I felt very limited in the amount of, like, I don't know, strategies I could make based on, like, what things I had on me, I guess would be what it is. But I do love the way that the world is built. I mean, the Dungeon World and Apocalypse World, both of them, the world games, I love the way that story is built, whether it's through the GM or the characters and the players, and that it really does make you RP and it does make you make decisions. But I guess that's my problem for me, is that I just wanted to experience a little bit more. And because we are limited in the time that we get to play, I think it's a lot different than if me and you guys were all playing this for like a year or two, right?
Right.
It'd be completely different. I think I'd be completely okay with the experience system. But because we're playing it in such a short period of time, I feel like I'm missing out on a huge aspect of the game. Whereas Apocalypse World, and I hate to compare the two, but Apocalypse World, it encouraged me to do actions because I was gaining things as I was doing those actions. Whereas here it was like, do really dumb things so that you can progress. And I was just like, that doesn't really make sense to me, because for me as a player, I'm like, if my character was doing that, like, unless I was a really dumb character, then it would make sense. But I don't know. And people, I love how people always say I'm metagamey, but like, you guys all play smart. Ryan did some amazing things. JP did some amazing things that were kind of metagamey in a sense, but like, no one calls that metagamey, right? I mean, for me, I just look at like the situation I'm in, what would my character do? And then I go forward and do it. Like, not that the other characters around me needed to do what I would do as a character, or that me as a person would do that. You know what I mean?
With the, just a comment on the XP system.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because in relation to Apocalypse World, where you highlight a stat, and then once you roll that stat, right, that's when you gain XP. Mm-hmm. In Apocalypse World, I felt like my character was a little bit pigeonholed into sort of being that guy that's always going to use that stat. What was interesting about Dungeon World is thinking that that was going to happen again, like, no matter what, I would find myself in situations where I would have to use my other skills. And that's where I think it was great because, okay, well, I'm going to now have to dodge this fucking dragon. Whereas before I was trying to stay as far away. So at least then I get XP for forced situations, which, you know, I was okay with either. But they're both very interesting. And I think it does add to some of the emotion in the group when it's like, yeah, I'm bummed that I missed it, but shit, I just hit level 5, so let's let's camp.
For sure, it's a cool idea, and like I said, I think that it'd be really awesome if I was playing this for a prolonged period of time, and I think I would have a different perspective on it, but because we're playing it for such a short period of time, I just felt like I didn't really get to see what the whole class had to offer, and I think that's more so the problem with it than just, oh, I didn't roll poorly. I love the bond concept. I think that we could definitely build upon that, and I like that, you know, Steven even said, like, hey, let's just make your own bonds. It doesn't have to be exactly what's listed on the sheets. But I think that something that we didn't do was really play off those bonds as well as we could have. Yeah. Also, like our class things that we would get, like the class experience you would get based on what you did. I was never really in situations where I could do that. So I think that that would be really cool if you're a DM to really concentrate on those things that each of your guys have as bonds and those kind of things and try to throw those in there as well.
Yep. That's actually legitimately my bad, is that what you're supposed to do as a DM is look at your alignments for your guys and put those situations into the game. And I tried a couple of times, like, I actually did think that one of the primary ways they could get past the salamanders is to have, you know, Lobelia do some sneaking and fiddle with the device while someone else was distracting. But, you know, you have to keep that in mind as a GM. And one of the core tenets for the GM, one of the guidelines, is to be a fan of your characters, which means letting them do the awesome stuff that they can do. Another way that I didn't do, that I wasn't enough of a fan of Lobelia, is that her poison didn't work nearly as often as it actually could have, because she was so often fighting, like, undead or gelatinous blobs, or, like, if she had tried to use the poison on Cathrist, he's just a pile of bones. Like, how is it going to work? If I were going to go back and retcon, or, you know, like, do that better, especially as Maggie was choosing, like, poison related level up abilities, I would have tried to, or I should have tried to be a little more heavy on ways that that could be cleverly used to the party's advantage. That's the sort of thing that as a GM, you just have to keep in your mind all the time. I'm a fan of my characters. How can I let them do awesome stuff? So, yeah. JP, what about you? How do you feel?
I think the XP system is, I think Maggie kind of nailed it pretty much. I agree perfectly. Like, if we were to play the characters for a lot longer, I think it would make sense, but there were, I think I just rolled pretty shitty, so I didn't have that much of an issue with it. And I think Ryan, for example, like, rolled very shittily.
Yes.
The entire show. Come up to us really
Ryan,
quickly.
What level did you end up at the end?
You would have been level 3, I think.
Yeah, I leveled at the end. Yeah. I was like 3.5, actually.
Yeah.
Which is what level I was. I think that was the same level as me and Wheat.
That's so amazing.
Which, if we played this game more, my complaint would have been that 10 levels probably wouldn't have been enough. I would have wanted to raise the level cap.
So now, if you
but
have.
I failed enough. Like, what level was everyone at the end?
We were all 3.
You were all 3?
Five.
I thought we said 5.
Was 5.
Okay. I was 5 too. So, like, I did roll poorly a lot of times. And that, to me, because there was like one game where all I did was roll bad. So it was like, oh, I'm just, well, at least I'm getting XP, right? But I wasn't really accomplishing very much for the party. So, yeah, I don't know.
Wait, you were 5, Wheat? How were you 5 and I was 3? Did I just roll well for, like,
I was 4 at like 7:10 this session, and I failed like 5 rolls. So,
I guess
you just hit 5.
I just hit 5. Yeah, sorry. My max level was 4 that I was.
So I asked actually, Ryan. I asked in there's a Google Plus group that's dedicated to Dungeon World, and I was like, you know, it seems like players level very quickly. what's your opinion on that? And could it be something where, like, when you fail at, on a stat, you mark the stat, and then when you camp, you can practice that stat, and if you choose to practice that stat, then you gain an XP instead of failing every time you fail or something like that, or instead of gaining XP every time you fail. And they said in reply that what ended up happening is you leveled up to level 4 or 5 pretty quickly because your stats are low enough that you end up failing much more often. I think on an unmodified 2d6, there's like a 42% chance of 6 or less. And then like a 48% chance of, or like a 38% chance of 7 to 9, and then an 18% chance of 10 plus. So, you know, if you're not rolling modified, then you actually have a pretty good chance of failing. Not huge, but some. But that as you level up, you end up distributing points such that you start failing less, so more of your XP comes from the end of session and your level ups come much more slowly. And people were saying how they'd been running a game for like 2 years and someone was only just now hitting level 9 or something like that. So
that makes sense, because if I had gotten the +3 dex modifier, then a lot of my 6s would have been pushed over to 7. Lobelia
never failed a dex.
Yeah, I mean, towards the end, it was like, and that's why I tried to do so many int rolls and like con rolls and stuff. Like, I was trying to, like, not that I was trying to do those, but I was like, when I'm in a situation that makes sense, like my character would do that, I'm like, I'm going to do it, right? Because that makes sense. And it actually benefited me, but like, for some reason, I got lucky all the time too, like lately. But yeah, so, and that's something Stephen and I had talked about before, was like, at some point I'm going to be maxed int, and then I'm not going to be failing any of my roles that I would normally do. So then are you like, and this is a question that I have, is like, should I be encouraged to do things that I normally wouldn't as a character? Like, my character wouldn't normally do X or Y, but because I want experience, I'm going to go do X and Y. Like, probably not. And that's why I didn't do some things that I would have done if I was being metagamey.
Totally. And interesting factoid, if you have a +3, you only have an 18% chance of failing. So it's actually, it ends up getting quite infrequent as you as you level up.
So I want to know what people thought about the classes they played. We what did you think about wizard or what mage or whatever it's called in this, and then bard after that?
So obviously wizard was a lot of fun, and Amsel was a lot of fun to play. I would have, because wizard is just my go-to class, right? Like, I'm usually going to go to a magic user or some. So when we had talked after Amsel died, and I was like, I did want to play a bard. And I think a couple of us wanted to play bard at the beginning, but it just worked in the story.
Yeah, I think three of us did. I know I did.
And I was really stoked that actually Amsel died after that, because it was just fun as shit. And because it is sort of the narrative, it let me do what I want to do with Wyman, which was just, you know, make up songs and silly rhymes and stuff. And I do think that, like, the bard is one that gets more OP as he levels up, you know, as all of a sudden heals are doing 2d8 and forwards are 2d4.
Damage doing 2d8 or 2d4,
Right, so, you know, but it was still fun through and through. Looking through, like, there's a ton of probably different ways that I would have tried to go. You can multi-class with the bard too. So, I mean, a good, like, support character overall, I think, for any dungeon world. You know, dungeon world party, and can still, you know, deal experience. I tend to play these characters that cannot do any sort of, like, physical combat at all, but I'm okay with that. So it was a lot of fun to play Wyman.
One of the interesting moves that you didn't ever use as a wizard, or you didn't get the chance to, is actually the ritual move, which is, if you find a place of power, then you can basically say, I'm doing a ritual, and this is the effect that I want. So it's like the way that the wizard gets to cast a powerful spell with basically any effect. There's also some things the dungeon world, or that the dungeon master, can throw in and be like, okay, you have to disenchant this item to do it, or you have to take this many weeks or days, or, you know, that kind of thing. But it's one of the very neat ways that the wizard sort of transcends the box of what's on the character sheet.
Yeah, there was actually quite a few things that I didn't get to do with Amsel, but
speaking to the role playing aspect of each character, did you kind of set out to do what you wanted to on both characters? Did you fulfill
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, Amsel, Amsel was more like I just want to go outside of my comfort zone. You know, like I play females and role playing games a lot. I'm like, but I want to be the one I've never played, and that was the old lady. And so I had a lot of fun with her. In fact, to the point where you guys remember when she died, I was salty because I was like, I was having so much fun playing.
Yeah, you were real pissed. I know.
but then once I sang my first Wyman song, I was like, holy shit, man, the possibilities are endless. Like, this is exactly where I want to, what I want to be doing for this session. So it fit in perfectly. I was very happy with Wyman. Very happy. I'm glad he didn't die so that maybe one day in the R&D universe, Wyman may return.
I'm glad. I
love
we...
both of your characters. And I'm from watching and experiencing it from like a non-player's perspective, I guess like from a party member, I loved the wizard and I loved the bard. I mean, like we got to experience the bard twice too in two different ways, and you both played them very differently, which I thought was cool because you can take your own flavor on the class too, which I thought was really neat. But yeah, both of them were helpful. Both of them had different situations that they could be really useful. It kind of sucked not having Lady Amsel a lot because she did like a lot of things that were like, oh man, now we can't do that anymore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I did want to just say, I think for Lord Wyman, I wrote almost 7 pages of lyrics, and some of them I didn't use, but I will probably post everything that Lord Wyman had said or did.
Nice.
But a lot of the little small stuff I would just literally write as we were playing, and most of the songs I came up with, like, I would just hear a song and be like, oh my god, that there it is, it's perfect, the words just pop in my head. So I that's had a blast awesome. With it.
That's really good when a game inspires you.
I
don't think a lot, I mean there are a few games here and there that do that to you, but like that is something that I love about RP games, especially like tabletop games like this where it's really built on like your imagination and creativity, and that's really what it comes down to. I mean, if we had a DM that wasn't that creative, or if we had a party member that wasn't that creative, we wouldn't have these epic stories that people are like 4,000 plus people are watching, you know? So yeah, it's just thumbs up.
I gave Wheat a task. I said, Wheat, tomorrow we're going to fight Cathrist. I need something awesome at the end of it. And he messaged me earlier today and he was like, I think I actually prepared for this the way a DM prepares for like all the possibilities.
You and guys,
I wrote a couple of songs.
I want to spill the beans. So because like Steven, I've taken a page out of his book. He's like, you have to prepare for a lot of different situations. So I actually had a song prepared for if I got a last hit on the dragon that if you guys know the song, Let's Hear It for the Boys, I wrote Let's Hear It for the Bard. I think it's fucking amazing.
Now you have to sing it.
And then
put on his YouTube.
The other healing song I didn't get to sing was basically Hold On by Wilson Phillips. That was only had a little bit of changes, but Rock, your song was Against All Odds. And this one is definitely going to be one that I record and put up because it's fucking perfect. So
that was funny too, because I think you mentioned on APITS yesterday, like 24 hours ago, I think is when we were recording that. You're like, yeah, Steven told me he wanted an epic song. And I was like, well, you fucking owe me one because you told me if I killed the fucking thing, you're gonna make me one. And you're like, oh shit.
Yeah.
So I think you had to prep for that too.
Yeah.
I think it's also interesting that like you learned to step, like I think you can tell me exactly the wording for it, but to kind of step outside of your character or your safe zone when it came to your role playing of your characters. I think I learned that gimmicks are fucking annoying after the first try, man. I hated Duncan. Like, I hated playing him.
Really?
So much so that like by the second and third episode, I was like, I fucking hate this character.
I know, you quit doing his like,
I was so
accent,
I was so bored.
I loved. I thought it was awesome.
I was so bored with him in the second episode and further. So that's
why. Do you
think
it was because the character that you had created in your head and that just didn't come out the way you had thought it was, or because of the class that you were playing?
I think it was just the fact that I had a fucking gimmicky flute that I had to like keep working with. And it became like an annoyance more so than it was like a fun factor. I also think it was also the fact that I've created since R&D season 2 started, I think I've made like five different characters over all their roleplay shows. So I was just out. I had no idea. Like Rock had no personality until the last episode, where his personality was just like a badass, but it's not even a personality.
Right.
Yeah, he was just a Rock.
That Rock actually, he ended up being very interesting primarily because of random things that happened. Like when he died and then he came back to life and then he had that fight last episode. Like that was kind of Rock's personality, was like,
right, right.
Like my body is in the way of death at all times and I don't give a shit. And yeah. Like yeah. I am going to power through this.
Yeah. I think towards the end that was kind of where I was going with that. But
yeah.
When everyone started dying, I got real excited I got to play a new character because I fucking hated Duncan.
One of the things that I tend to encourage when people make characters in order to like, because it's hard, right? It's hard to make a character that's not based on a gimmick or doesn't have like one thing that they do. And this is actually a secret. I've seen chat and like Reddit and be like, oh my God, Steve makes such amazing characters. Not actually true, you guys. I make characters with really strong, memorable gimmicks. And if I were to play Horkenfriend for more than one session,
you would find him
wildly annoying.
Yeah.
Because like as a GM, what you get to do is you get to throw out so many characters constantly that like
and if for the short players, bits of time, right?
Right. And if the players never see it again, then they still remember and they're like, man, remember the time we met that guy who like slapped my ass back in his house and it was hilarious? But what I tend to encourage when making a character that's going to stick around for a longer period of time is choose something that you love and choose something that you hate. And neither of those things can be related to the core mechanics of the game. So like you cannot love killing monsters. You cannot hate the great dragon Cathrist. It has to be something like I love custard pies and, right. You know, I hate waking up wet. And then like having those things gives for example, Bubba was fantastic for this because he had,
he had
the magazines that he loved.
Well, it was also, I think, that I enjoy playing him.
Yes, that's absolutely
That's
awesome.
Like the biggest thing is you have to enjoy what you're playing. So,
but when a character has things that they love and hate, they have a personality that's outside the mechanics of the game, they really begin to blossom and grow. And it lets your GM play with that and put you in situations. Oh, you hate spiders? Well, surprise, you're walking through this passageway and tons of spiders are dropping all over for you. What do you do?
Yeah.
So, you know, that's one of the things that I think about when making characters.
To speak to, like, the actual class, I think Paladin is fucking broken. Like,
well,
granted, we were in a situation where these disabilities don't impact me because I'm not going to play the character again.
I think that's
a big part of it. But, dude, some of this other shit on this character sheet is insane. Like, there's things where you can add 1d4 on you and an ally for your attacks. You get +1 armor while on a quest. You get +1 to order your hirelings. When you heal an ally,
so much stuff
you get an additional
D8. That's why
I
want to level up and see. Like, I wish we could just play a game where we're like, all right, give you all the abilities, max level, go.
I could,
because like, there's some really cool things that we could have done.
At the end of the day, I could have done 1d4, 1d4, 2d4. And a D10 +1 for just normal damage anytime I swing.
Yep.
And that's like, before level 5. It gets better 6 to 10.
And that's like, so like, that means that the Paladin is very good in one specific situation. But the great thing about Dungeon World is it gives the GM a lot of tools to negate that kind of advantage. You drop your weapon. You are, you know, you're being held or grappled or something like that. Or the monster is making an attack that isn't just straight damage. It's actually, you know, magic. Or when you put yourself in the spot, it can be as simple as your foot gets stuck like in a small hole in the ground and you twist your ankle. And then you're stuck there. You need to like deal with that before you can go on.
Right.
So, you know, I think that the Paladin does sound pretty damn strong.
I also don't know
why he was just nuts. He was cool though.
I don't know why you play cleric over paladin, because paladin gets every cleric spell.
Only if you take the move. So like as you level up to level 10, you're
But it's like it's an important move, I would think.
Yeah, but you know, if you have a cleric, then you wouldn't take that. Or if you want to build your paladin in a different direction, then you wouldn't take that.
I guess that's true.
I mean, like you don't get every move when you hit level 10. You only get to choose 9 of them.
Right.
So
right.
There you go. The ranger well, like the also gets thing. Cleric spells. Yeah. The druid can take ranger.
Druid can take ranger. Yeah. Yep. There's so many multi-classing. Okay. See, I didn't know there's that. So many multi-classing options, which I actually think is really cool that you can do that kind of stuff. Thief didn't really have a way to do that, but I think that's something that you did, Steven, that was kind of a little bit more on the fly, because that's not something that was in the book, right?
Which?
Letting me use items.
No, that's not. Items.
So but this like, is something that I want to just bring up, is that the DM can kind of change the rules a bit, right, to make it really cool. And I think that that's something that you did for me that also fit my background story a little bit better. And like, I'm going to release that information, like my background story, just like Wheat is going to release some of his songs, because I gave that to Steven off the bat. Like, I don't know what was with me, but like, I got super pumped and excited, and I just wrote like a huge background story for my character.
Yeah.
But, and he played off of that and made me like a cool item, magic item use ability. Option, which I thought was really neat.
And like that also comes from like traditional D&D. One of the roles of the thief is that they can activate magic devices, but not nearly as reliably. So like in second edition, they've got charts of like percentage to activate rod, staff, or wand and whatever. And I was just like, well, that makes a lot of sense. Let's go for it. Sure.
And I failed a couple, but it was still cool, you know, and it added some flavor where, like, you know, Wyman was like, eh, let's not let you do that right now. We've seen how good you can use it. But when I did get the opportunity to, sometimes it was really cool.
I want to hear from Ryan, because you've played primarily a ranger, I think, throughout your entire D&D career, I mean, I guess, if you can call it that.
I really liked the ranger class, but yeah.
Yeah, so what did you think on this take of the typical ranger class and what you've played?
I think in this system, the ranger it seems much more powerful than it does in traditional D&D ranger, because primarily because your pet has such an improved role. Whereas like in traditional D&D, what I've played, your pet can help out, but it's not to the extent that it really, like, you have moves, its ferocity adds to your attack, like all kinds of stuff. So the pet seems like it really like enhances the ranger class. Whereas like in the D&D version that I play, it's just better on paper to play a fighter with a bow. And like like playing a ranger, really, like, there's not like, it's just pick a fighter, like, they're just better.
Right. I honestly, if you want to play a ranger, play in like, let's say 2.0, 2.5. For D&D, I would play a druid, because druids are fucking OP, and just go arrange druid. I think that would be a better option than actually playing the ranger, unfortunately, in Dungeons & Dragons. Yeah. My opinion, so, though.
Like, that's, like, I feel like ranger is now, like, on par with the other classes in this system, which is cool. Like ranger, in my opinion, is, like, a badass thing to play, just, like, lore-wise and, like, what they represent and all that stuff. Yeah. And the fact that they've been, like, brought into line with the, like, the pet being better and the skills being really good and all that stuff, and the fact that they're still really effective in melee combat, all that stuff, like, the ranger just feels really good in the system. So I like them a lot.
Nice. So
I will say in that regard, like, the, and I'll let you talk in a moment, Steve, sorry. But I would say, like, just like Ryan was saying, that it's really cool how balanced these games are with all the classes. Like, a lot of them have their flavor, and obviously the DM has to play off of them. Otherwise they do start feeling like, oh, one is not as powerful. But yeah, I feel like they do a really good job with both worlds games, the Dungeon World and Apocalypse World, that we've gotten to play, with balancing the classes and making them really fun to play.
Yeah. So I was going to say, one thing, you bringing up your pet reminds me of, is the one area that I'm not entirely comfortable with in Dungeon World yet is hirelings. Oh my god. They're actually very difficult to
use. They were so, like, useless. They were just sitting in the corner sometimes.
Let me like come back through here and see if I can find the actual, like, the way that it's stated. So hirelings do what you tell them to, so long as it isn't obviously dangerous, degrading, stupid, and their cost is met. When a hireling finds themselves in a dangerous, degrading, or just flat-out crazy situation due to your orders, roll plus loyalty. On 10+, they stand firm, carry out the order. On 7-9, they do it for now, but come back with serious demands later. And then things like Quellim was a warrior. So the entry here for warrior skill is called Man-at-Arms. When you deal damage while a warrior aids you, add their skill to the damage done. If your attack results in consequences, the Man-at-Arms takes the brunt of it. The way these read to me, and the reason that it felt so difficult for me to work them in, is because they're all when you do blank and the hireling aids you. And so it really more like I never really got to them to do things, because It's more like they're in control of the players, and the players are sort of using them to boost the player's own capabilities.
I feel like it should, like, hireling should be less on the DM's part. I feel like, in my opinion, from what you just read and stuff, that the hirelings, like, whoever hires them or whatever, should be the one being like, hey, you, go do X. Hey, you, go do Y. And it should be less on the DM, but then the DM reacts like, he does that. Or, nah, he doesn't really think that that's a good idea. Or he thinks that you're, like, you know, degrading him, right? And then you would have to write your logo too. So I think that that was something that we didn't do well as players.
It's challenging, but you know, it was still fun to have them around.
So I do want to take at least one or two questions from the chat. If you guys want to start spamming it up, I know there's a 30-second delay, so we'll fill until we start seeing those. But we're not going to go too much longer. I think looking forward, Ryan, we got to have you back on.
Yeah,
I would love to come back. Like, you guys, this crew, like, I don't have enough good things to say about you guys. You guys were awesome. Aww. So
right back at you, man.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan. It was awesome that you got to join us. I'm sorry you only got to join for, like, the climactic battle and one other session.
Yeah.
But
I mean, you just jumped in and played well. And I think, you know, Sean, too, he was part of the Dungeon World crew. And I think both of you guys just jumped in and played a fantastic role within our story. And, you know, I really hope somebody makes this into, like, an animated series or something. All of these games have been amazing. And if I was a better artist, I would totally do it myself.
It's a tall order, man. Animation's a motherfucker.
Yeah.
I wrote a lot of stories, so we'll see if I'll start trying to release some of them. But I think that these are just awesome characters from everyone all around and just amazing stories that we've built. But it looks like we have a few questions here.
Yeah. Well, some of them, a lot of them are cheap answers or cheap questions. Someone asked Steve, how OP was JP?
JP was really hard to kill. Like, holy crap. Especially when your dragon does D12 plus 5 damage and he's just like, well, I just take a minus 1 to my rolls from now on instead.
Yeah, it's pretty cheap.
It's like, huh. Like one of the moves that Cathrist had was attack twice. So I was like, okay, well, he just attacks JP twice.
Yeah.
Eat it.
I also got to cover the fact that I was anticipating just being a badass and, like, walking through those two attacks. But then I rolled to save life and I was like, oh, this is going all according to plan. I'm just making a deal with death.
Yeah. That's super
fun. That was totally planned.
I see a lot of people
charisma,
asking.
Man.
Someone wants, Scratch.
Yes.
What was he? You don't know him, Ryan, but he was a
character.
Yes,
please. What was he or it or she?
I have not decided a gender for Scratch, and I never did. Scratch was always intended to be completely gender ambiguous. I actually toyed in my mind with ideas like having Scratch be like the high priest of Cathrist and like the salamanders worshiping him or her because of like his or her complete androgyny, and, like, sort of elevating this you know child because you know he or she
like
is Hermes. Indeterminate. Yeah, but you know that didn't play out.
What was the spell that Cathrist used that got sucked up into the ring, the first one? Or sorry, not the first one.
The
second
one that made it explode?
Yeah,
that
the first one was
stop.
Animate Dead. Okay. And Time Stop just slows down time?
It would have stopped it, and he would have gotten like 3 free attacks on the entire party.
Oh, God.
Well, here's a question from the mass. Do you think Dungeon World is more combat-oriented than Apocalypse World without the social classes like the Touchstone or the Skinner? And I know Ryan won't really be able to talk on that, Mark, but all of us have played both of those. And I don't think so. I think they both had the same amount of both. Like, and it depended on, like, what the setting was that you put us in.
So for
and how
me,
we
like,
reacted.
Dungeon World really cleaves to that old school idea of dungeons and dragons.
Right.
And so, like, every class is built to deal with those situations for sure. But they also have lots of abilities. Well, there's one ability per stat, basically. So your intelligence, wisdom, and charisma stats are all much more social. And so those play in just like the Dungeon World, just like the Apocalypse World.
I think
world,
that the Touchstone was pretty much like the bard in this situation for our parties. Like the bards ended up being like the forward front person that would always talk to everybody. Whereas the Touchstone in Apocalypse World, which was what I was playing, was the one who would always talk to people. But the setting was completely different. It was a very, very different setting and situation. But
Ryan, we're going to give you the final question.
Okay.
All right. From Zulina in the chat, they ask, as someone who is normally pretty damned quiet in the other D&Ds, how did you like having to come up with more of your environment when you entered, having to describe more of your contributions, more of everything? Will you take it with you into other role-playing games?
Sure. I honestly feel like one of my weaknesses is trying to be creative. And I feel like Steven did a great job of like igniting my imagination and the system at the same time. The fact that you can do whatever you want and that it's so free, like just say whatever you want. And if you roll well enough, you can do it, was really like a good catalyst for trying to open a player like me up who, you know, like I don't always have the best imagination and stuff like that. So I really thought it was cool, and I probably should try and fit it into the way that I play role play, because I think it makes me expand my role playing skill as a player, and it's probably more entertaining for viewers as well. So absolutely.
I gotta say,
I thought you were great.
Yeah, Ryan. You could have surprised me.
You did some amazing things that I was like, that was really smart. That was a good idea. Like, that was something that I could totally see your character doing. So, I don't know. I think you have it in you without Steven. I just think that, you know, you just need to butt in and interrupt sometimes. And I think that's the great thing about these types of games is there's no initiative. It's less of like,
yeah,
oh, I have to think about what I'm going to do before my turn comes up, and more of like, I'm just going to jump in and do this. And some DMs for Dungeons and Dragons will let you do that. It's just situational, and it's usually out of combat, I guess.
Going back to like the idea of R&D exploring systems, I actually think the system of Dungeon World, like if I were to put the blame somewhere, I'd put it there. Because the system just, you know, you can describe anything that you want to do. You, as the GM, you are straight up told, ask the players and use their answers. And so, you know, like the rules of the game encourage that kind of incredibly creative, collaborative storytelling. So that's really cool.
Ryan, I think if you take the country, I don't even know what the fuck you would call it, accent that you have when we troll CS, put that into a character, you'll have a lot of fun.
Yeah. I'd have to troll my, you know, my castmates as well, though, with it, I think. But yeah. I love doing that accent.
Even the nuances of just being an idiot and like bringing up Cheeto dust and random shit like that, like I think you could do really fun.
Yeah. I feel like coincidentally, that's probably what I have the easiest time role playing is just some like country idiot that eats Cheetos all day.
Yeah. I think it's good.
You'd be Bubba's best friend.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that was.
Yep. Do you like Dirty Mags?
Yeah. That was one of the. It was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun. So.
Yeah.
All right, cool. Well, let's wrap up the show, and then we'll talk a little bit about where we're going from here. So, Wheat, why don't you start us off with some shout-outs?
Shout-out first and foremost to Ryan for joining us for the latter couple sessions. As always, my shout-outs to Steven. You're fantastic and great, and that song that was dedicated to you I mean every word of it. I always feel like Steven's just out to kill me all the time, but I love it. I will be streaming tomorrow, as I normally do. I've got my AHGL match, which I compete in StarCraft II with Team Twitch on Sunday, so hopefully you'll join me for that. Yeah, guys, thank you so much. You can follow me on Twitter, DJ Wheat. I'll be streaming on twitch.tv/DJ Wheat, and I cannot wait to find out. I assume you're going to tell us what the next game is going to be.
We're gonna do what we did last time. We're gonna tease it.
Oh,
but we're
no
not
shit! I actually okay.
Do you know what the next game is, Wheat?
I don't know. I think I saw based off what you're saying, but
okay, cool. Well, what's that mean? We'll just tell you when we go offline. Maggie, do some shout-outs.
All right. Oh my gosh! Thank you, Ryan, for being our guest, and Sean, wherever you are, maybe you're watching somewhere. Steven, awesome DM as per normal. Love it. You always inspire us all to come up with really cool characters and stories. Wheat and JP, love you guys. JP, so thank you so much for, you know, letting me be part of this fantastic show. I love it so much, and I look forward to it every week. And thank you guys all for watching, because, you know, this wouldn't be something that we could really do without you guys. So I hope that you guys are enjoying it and inspires. That's something I gotta say, is all of you guys who were saying that you're not really a Dungeons and Dragons type of person, and this kind of show is making you want to find a new party, or you found a new party and you guys have started playing RP games, like that's so inspiring for us. That's like, yeah, that's exactly what we want. We want you guys to make more, like, have your own party and come up with your own stories and tell us about it because it's fantastic. And all the people who are making really cool fan art, oh, it's so cool. It's awesome. I wish I was an artist because I envision like things, but I see how you guys envision it. And it's just amazing to see how we can all just have like different perspectives on things. And of course, you guys can check out all my stuff at margaretcrone.com. I do all kinds of things with anime, gaming. I'm a game developer as well. So you can go check out all my stuff over there and follow me on Twitter if you want to keep up to date with me.
Cool stuff. Steven, do some shout outs.
Yeah, so Dungeon World is probably my number one favorite RPG at the moment. I'm really looking forward to getting to play some RPGs that I haven't played before in the future. But the next one I have played before, and I actually really like it as well. It's really cool. I can't wait to show you guys what's in store. Thanks for watching. Thanks for you guys for playing. Ryan, thanks for joining us. It's awesome to have you so willing to just jump in at the very end of a show and just throw yourself into it. Day 9, if you're out there watching or finding out about it, you're the man. And it was awesome to have iRoller around. I actually thought druids were pretty OP as well.
Yeah. Well, you know, originally I wanted to play them, and I was like, I should not do this.
Yeah. There is a QA thread on Reddit. I'll post that into chat right now so you can ask me any questions you didn't feel like got answered sufficiently here. Once again, I'm the lead level designer on a game called Warhammer 40,000 Eternal Crusade. It's slated for launch at the end of 2015, and it is a massive PvP third-person shooter MMO set in the Warhammer 40,000 universe. So you should come check it out, eternalcrusade.com. That's all.
There you go. Ryan? It was short but sweet. Do some final shout-outs for us.
Indeed. As always, Twitch, guys, fans, thank you so much for watching, for putting out content. Like, I think there was a new song today. There's, like, always new pictures and all that stuff. Thank you guys so much. Like, it enhances our experience tenfold. So, seriously, really, really appreciate that. To the cast, JP, as always, thank you for having me on your roleplay shows, man. I always enjoy it. Steven, you're an amazing DM, and I think I've been spoiled with the caliber of DMs that I've had on role playing. You know, I've only been doing this for a year role playing, and I think I really have been spoiled. Maggie and Wheat, I don't think I've ever had somebody so enthusiastic in a game, and you're just always like out there, you know, just stepping up and doing stuff. It was a blast to play with you and Wheat. Your songs were epic, man. So seriously, thank you guys so much. For my own stuff, I am going to take a little break after this, get some dinner, but I think I'm going to be streaming some Path of Exile tonight. There's a new expansion that's out.
Yeah.
So I'm going to do that over on Twitch.tv/RyuZilla, and I'm also going to be doing a 24-hour stream next Friday, so definitely tune in, look out for that. My Twitter stuff, you can follow me at MLGRyan, and you can check out my YouTube, youtube.com/RyuZilla. Thank you, guys.
Cool stuff. As for me, I'll do everything after we go offline, or sorry, after we close show out here. But I think we're going to start up next Saturday. I think.
I'm down.
I got to talk with our new castmate, Neil Koibu Erickson, to see if he's down.
Is that the announcement, or do we announce that already?
We announced that. It's out there.
Okay, cool. I didn't know if we tweeted it or something.
Yeah, it's been tweeted. We'll see when we're going to play exactly. We'll let you guys know. I'll probably end up doing that tonight or tomorrow after Solemn or something like that. We do have Solemn tomorrow with myself, Ryan, and three other roleplay members, Livin' Pink, Jeff and Control Robinson, and our other DM, Neil Koibu Erickson. So if you want to see what his DMing is like and also just who he is, if you don't know, you can tune in tomorrow at, I think we're doing that at 8 Eastern. Ryan, is that checkout?
You know, I always just check Skype. Like, yeah. I'm a last minute.
That's true. I think it's 8 Eastern, so you can look forward to that for role play stuff. And then we don't really have anything else planned, so we'll just let you guys know. But that's it. I will tease after the 3-minute commercial break here to close out the show because I am an asshole like that. We'll see you guys later. Thanks everyone, and thanks once again to Ryan for coming on the show.
Peace.
Thank you, Ravi.
Later.